Good morning. Tuesday, February 11th, 2025. Welcome all. We will begin with about 20 minutes of meditation and then some reflections. Couple people still drifting in, but I think we can start the sit. I'll keep an eye out on the waiting room. Okay, just settling back. Can close your eyes or just lower your gaze. Beginning by bringing attention into the body. First thing we pay attention to is the posture, just the way we're holding our body. And then the general energetic feeling of the body, whether you're drowsy or alert, stressed, relaxed. Really just a check-in. Are you feeling? And to increase the mindfulness and focus. Start to move the attention through or over the body and just touch on different areas of sensation from the head downward or from the feet upward. You might find certain areas of the body feel particularly alive and awake. Other parts you don't really feel very much. It's normal. Seeing if you can settle or relax the body, release any tension might be a feeling of groundedness or feeling the pull of gravity, the weight. The body can start to attune to subtle ways that we hold on to tension. In this way, we learn to let go on a more subtle level. The attention then can go to the breath. It's quite a natural place to arrive. As we pay attention to the body, the breath is always there, always moving. Subtle, gentle sensations, breathing in, breathing out. Awareness of the body and the breath. These are nonverbal experiences. Tendency of the mind is to display words and images, thoughts. And so, as we try to pay attention to the more subtle aspects, the nonverbal, we might be drawn away into these thoughts. We don't have to fight with thoughts or judge thoughts, just you can, when you see them, let them go. Come back to the simplicity of breath. Thoughts, feelings, sensations. They're all happening in the space of mind. The mind. The silent knowing quality. If we are able to attune to this knowing quality to any degree, it helps us shift our perspective from the idea that there's some busyness and noise that we have to get away from, to the view that we are simply knowing the activities of the senses and the mind. That these activities, the sense impressions, mental impressions, don't have to disturb us. Understand that they are simply empty phenomena arising and passing in this space of knowing, this space of mind. Okay, couple things before launch into the main topic. First of all, anybody in the Bay Area who's interested in sitting with me in person tonight, I will be at the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery for my second Tuesday class, 7:30. That's at 2304 McKinley Avenue, Berkeley. So fly on up, fly on down. question about the podcast. So it is distributed to all the main like podcast organ things. Trying to find a link on my, as we have a page on my website that has a link. Here it is. I'll put it in the, so it's distributed directly to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Pandora. You might still find it on just like a generic podcast app. So most phones have a generic podcast app, but you can get them for free. Because these, I think all of these companies charge for, I know I have a Spotify account, so that I have to pay for. Anyway, I hope that helps. The idea was to make it easier for people to listen without having to go to my website and download the file and all that. So that, okay, that's all I wanted to say. I've been doing a little bit more reading and reflecting in this winter of our discontent. And pulled out a book that was very influential and important for me about 20 years ago by Ajahn Amaro. It's called Small Boat, Great Mountain. And I suspect that it can be found on one of their the monastery websites. And the book is based on a retreat that Ajahn Amaro taught with the Tibetan Dzogchen master Sokni Rinpoche. And so Amaro was kind of trying to make these connections with Dzogchen. So Dzogchen, I don't know, I can't speak with any authority about it, but it's somewhat about tapping into emptiness, we could say, or just the pure mind, which I was kind of pointing to in the guided meditation today, sort of the consciousness, undiluted. And so Amaro is kind of making the argument that this approach to Dharma is actually inherent to Theravada Buddhism and particularly to the Thai forest tradition. So it's a somewhat audacious claim, but he certainly makes a good argument throughout this book, and it's a beautiful book. And really, as I say, it affected my practice a lot, the way I think about practice. And I remember him saying that when he published it, he got some pushback from more traditional Theravadan monks in Thailand. So he was kind of talking about, praise and blame, if you're familiar with that contrast in Buddhism, the sort of the different sides. Anytime you're going to get praise, you're also going to get blame. So I thought I would read a little bit from this, and then maybe reflect on it a bit. And this is, as I said, Small Boat, Great Mountain, by Ajahn Amaro, and this is page 23 from the chapter called The Place of Non-Abiding. And this is the sub heading Still Flowing Water, which is a, well, it's an expression that's associated with Ajahn Chah, and I believe there was actually a book with that title. So he says, Ajahn Chah, throughout his teaching career, posed a number of different questions. The very last questions he came up with before his health deteriorated were in the form of a little series. Have you ever seen still water? People would nod. Yes, of course, we've seen still water before. At the same time, they were probably saying inwardly, now that's a pretty strange question. But outwardly, everyone was very respectful to Ajahn Chah, as he was one of Thailand's great meditation masters. Then he would ask, well, then have you ever seen flowing water? And that also seemed a strange thing to ask. They'd respond, yes, we've seen flowing water. So, did you ever see still flowing water? In Thai, you would phrase that as Nam Lai Ning. Have you ever seen Nam Lai Ning? No, that we have never seen. He loved to get that bewilderment effect. Ajahn Chah would then explain that the mind's nature is still, yet it's flowing. It's flowing, yet it is still. He would use the word citta for the knowing mind, the mind of awareness, that citta itself is totally still. It has no movement. It is not related to all that arises and ceases. It is silent and spacious. Mind objects, sights, sounds, smell, taste, touch, thoughts, and emotions flow through it. Problems arise because the clarity of the mind gets entangled with sense impressions. The untrained heart chases the delightful, runs away from the painful, and as a result, finds itself struggling, alienated, and miserable. By contemplating our own experience, we can make a clear distinction between the mind that knows, citta, and the sense impressions that flow through it. By refusing to get entangled with any sense impressions, we find refuge in that quality of stillness, silence, and spaciousness, which is the mind's own nature. This policy of non-interference allows everything and is disturbed by nothing. I think that's one of the clearer descriptions of kind of something that we could say is kind of the heart of this practice of Buddhist meditation practice. And it really, I think in a practical way, points us to how to work with, or not even how to work with, but the attitude to bring to our meditation. Even if we can't perceive, even if we're not aware of that stillness, if we take the attitude that all that this that's happening here in my apparent, experience, what I am aware of, all the sensations, emotions, thoughts, if I have the attitude and the understanding that, oh, that's all happening in a space that is, and that space, if I could know it, and maybe you do, maybe you have experienced it, some of you I know have, that space is still and undisturbed. But just to keep the attitude that, like, this is stuff that's just passing through, and it's not wrong. It's not supposed to be there. It's supposed to be there. That's its nature, right? That our mind and body are going to generate sights, sounds, tastes, smells, thoughts, emotions, sensations, This is just what it does, what or what they do, mind, if we want to separate mind and body. Because I think that the contrasting attitude that can often be brought to meditation is, this isn't supposed to be happening. I'm not supposed to be thinking. I'm not supposed to have these feelings. These noises or these sensations, they need to go away for me to meditate. So it's like we are, in a way, grasping after the stillness, which, not just in a way, I mean, that's very much what I think we all fall into at times in our meditation, grasping after the stillness. But you can see in that very statement the contradictory nature of that idea. You can't grasp stillness. Trying to grasp after stillness is inherently agitating. And so when we can understand this and sit with this attitude, even if we're not feeling the stillness, we can be less disturbed by the flowing of mind, and knowing that there is stillness. And the less disturbed we are by this, by the flowing mind, the more accessible the still mind becomes. And it's, again, not a question of going after it, but more allowing it to emerge through the non-activity, the non-engagement with the flow. And the flow is just flowing, it's just moving through, and we're seeing it. But if we're not, the less we get hooked into it, the less it obscures the stillness. So, I think when I read this book initially, I had done enough practice, that I had had this experience, that I'd had been able to kind of experience some of that stillness, and that it was kind of a very revealing way for me to understand what was happening in meditation. I think that's one of the things that's challenging. When we get serious, and after, as our experience in meditation grows, we can come to a point where there's this kind of question, like, what's the point of this? What am I trying to achieve? There's this vague, far-off idea of enlightenment, but right now, right here, and I'm sitting, and maybe things are getting quiet. And what am I supposed to make of that? And so this perspective, I think, helps us to find at least one way of understanding and holding our experience. So, as I was reflecting on this as a talk this morning, then I kind of asked myself, well, what's this have to do with recovery? Because this one of the elements of this class is Dharma and recovery. And it seems to me that this is, taking us into that same territory that the addict has to deal with, because as addicts, we get so caught in the agitation, in the flowing. The flowing starts to be like, a waterfall. It's just a surge. It's just, we get overwhelmed by it. And so we don't, I think when we hear the idea of stillness, we're very drawn to that, but we have a hard time getting there when we're sober. And it's indeed one of the things that people chase after in their active addiction is quieting the mind. And just letting things settle, and just the right amount of alcohol or drugs, just for like 30 seconds, we get to that place like, oh yeah, there, that's what I wanted, and then we take the next drink, and then we lose it pretty quickly. But there is this element of it, so I think it points to this idea that feelings aren't facts and thoughts aren't facts. This is another way of characterizing what Ajahn Chah and Ajahn Amaro are talking about. And facts being things that are solid, stable realities, and the flowing mind is not solid or stable. It is just flowing by its nature. And so this again, without even touching the stillness, if we can remind ourselves, oh, this is just the flowing mind, the stillness is in there. If I don't fight with it, then I think that supports the those difficult moments of recovery when things become, when the mind starts to get overwhelmed. That's interesting. It's a very short little piece, and it didn't take me very long to talk about it, but I feel like it's a worthy topic for all of us. Maybe I'll read a little bit more here of this section. Which, is a little more technical, but interesting. The natural ability to separate mind, or mind essence, to use Dzogchen terminology, and mind objects is clearly reflected in the Pali language. So the natural ability to separate mind and mind objects is reflected in the Pali language. So the Pali language is the language that the earliest Buddhist texts were preserved in. There are actually two different verbs meaning to be, and they correspond to the conventional or conditioned and to the unconditioned. The verb hoti refers to that which is conditioned and passes through time. These are the common activities and the labels of various sense impressions that we use regularly, and for the most part, unconsciously. Everyone agrees, for example, that water is wet, the body is heavy, there are 7 days in the week, and I am a man. The second verb, ati, refers to the transcendental quality of beingness. Beingness, in this case, does not imply a becoming, the world of time or identity. It reflects the unconditioned, the unmanifest nature of mind. So, for example, in the passages from the Udana, which is one of the ancient texts, about the unborn, and that sphere, this is a quote, and that sphere of being where there is neither a coming nor a going nor a staying still, the verb ati is always used. It indicates a supramundane, timeless isness. The fact that the distinctions between the mind, citta, and the mind objects are embedded in the language itself offers both a reflection on and a reminder of this basic truth. So two different verbs for the verb to be, things that are that we accept as ordinary realities, and then this just being, which is, it's a good distinction. Well, I will leave it at that and see if there are any comments, questions. Aaron, I see you waving your hand there. Keep going. Still muted.
There we go.
There you go.
Hi, thank you for the wonderful talk. It is pretty funny. And another coincidence, which I don't believe in anymore. Your question, what does this have to do with recovery, is bothering me right now. As you can see, I'm in a sunny place, and that's Arizona, but I'm from Denver. The reason that's important is because, oh, first of all, I just celebrated 1 year of sobriety.
All right. Yay.
And people in Arizona are, they are MAGAs, Republicans. I come from a place that's very liberal and open. And I had to speak, like we all do, to celebrate your birthday. And when I tried to describe the best thing, the greatest thing I've gotten out of this, yes, I got my kids back and things with my husband are better, all that. But what came to mind was this in my therapist, I'm jumping a little, my therapist, when I first came to AA, I was overcome with what I thought was anxiety. So he spent the next year trying to help me get through that. It's major childhood trauma. Everyone has their own shit. But the first thing he made me do is a 30-day course in meditation. And I would go up into, behind me is a park, up into the desert and sit on a bench and meditate as the sun rose. What I learned out there was, okay, these cactus that are blooming flowers have no anxiety. When I was studying nature, I was like, and all these beautiful things aren't feeling, tense and stressed. They're just doing. So when I tried to explain the other day about what happened to me fairly recently during meditation, and by the way, I have never tried to do anything. I just breathe, and whatever's there, I've learned, just let it be there. I don't feel the effects of it right away sometimes, and sometimes I do. But this particular time, I was in my pool meditating, and it may sound silly to you because you've done it, and all of you listening have done it so many times, but I opened my eyes after this meditation where I was totally still. I wasn't trying to do anything. I wasn't trying to know anything. I knew about equanimity, everything. I'm just letting it be there. And I opened my eyes, and for the first time in my life, honest to God, no desire. I had absolutely no desire. Every single thing was perfect. I mean, the orange tree hanging over my pool, the oranges were like psychedelic, and the oleanders, I was like, thank you for the privacy, and so on. Well, anyway, I tried to describe this in my meeting, and I got looked at like I'm mental, and then somebody came up to me and said, where in the 12 steps is that? And
It's a little thing called spiritual awakening. I don't know if anybody's heard of that, but it's in the 12 steps.
the answer is
Of
so
course.
obvious. For me in the meditation, that's
Oh.
when I'm feeling this flow, this non-resistance, this acceptance. And that for me is how I experience this higher power notion. That is how I feel God. But I am getting kind of ridiculed about it. What do you do? Just
I
do I
say
sit there?
fuck them and God bless them and just don't tell them.
Don't tell them is what I was wondering.
They don't need to know. It's none of their business. Your spiritual life is your spiritual life. Your higher power is your higher power. Everybody wants to get into your business. Not everybody, but some people want to get into your business in the 12-step world. And it's just out of fear and sometimes jealousy and mis and ignorance. I mean, not willful, and they just don't know. And so, we don't need to deal with them, just like, I mean, that's why, like, I mean, when I started to integrate Dharma and Buddhism into my 12 steps, I didn't go into AA meetings and say, so the Four Noble Truths are really, I just kept it on the down low. It was like, well, this is what I do, and I kept it very, very separate for a long time, until I was able to turn it into a te something where I could use it through. I mean, I introduced all this stuff through the Buddhist world, not through the recovery world, because the
Oh,
recovery world
right.
is, the recovery world is very protective, and understandably, I mean, we're so vulnerable, and there's so much fear around relapse, which is, I guess, again, understandable. I respect what the how the 12-step world, how conservative it is in terms of, like, we're not gonna, like, keep changing the words and the language. We're not gonna re It's like, this is how we do it. That's fine. But it also, if you read Bill Wilson, and if you the simple phrases like God as we understand him, and what Bill Wilson says about, we found a lot of wisdom outside of the meanings, it's all there. The suggestion
The suggestions,
that
yes.
we go ahead and do, but it's not, we're not invited to sort of bring that all back, into the rooms, even though, of course, we know that because we live in a Christian country, and Christians feel that that they've got the right to, that when it says God, that means Jesus Christ, my Lord and Savior, that it's perfectly fine to be talking about Jesus in an AA meeting, which, to me, that's breaking the traditions much more than anything you were doing. But that's, again, like, we don't fight anyone or anything. We don't need to get into it, right? It's just like, so yeah, I avoid anything that's gonna, like, freak, I mean, yeah, freak people out, I guess. You freaked them out. Like, that's understandable,
Oh, people sent me psalms. They sent me quotes from the Bible, multiple people.
Yeah. And they think they're helping, so, God bless them.
Thank you.
They're not doing it out of harm, out of the effort to harm. They just, it's ignorance. Jeff, are you gonna, did you want
Yes, please.
to
Thank you.
attribute something? Yes.
Yeah, I believe it is on page 92, but I'm probably wrong. Of as Bill seizures, I mean, sorry, as Bill sees it,
Yeah.
that he calls AA a spiritual kindergarten. And one experience with kindergarten, one might be reminded that there was always that kid in the corner eating the paste. And it's been my experience, like hers, that occasionally. For instance, I don't say the Lord's Prayer because I, yeah, doesn't work for me. And I've been approached by people who have told me that I was damned to hell because I would not see this group of verses that they enjoy. I'd say, well, I hope that's not so, but see you next meeting, And a simple thing about speaking about your spiritual life is that nobody wants to hear your dreams. No, have you ever gotten in a situation, what I dreamt last night? No, that's an instantaneous conversation killer. Nobody.
That's a good comparison, Jeff.
Thank you.
It's interesting. I mean, I would also say that, Aaron, what you're describing could also be called serenity. which although it's not in the 12 steps, it is in one of our main prayers. So, and very few people in the 12-step world experience the kind of serenity that you experienced in that moment, and they don't even understand that that's what it is, so they're confused. Jamie, hey.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I would just say in my experience, I have found in any spiritual practice, whether it's religion or AA or anything, there's always a bit of dogma that kind of gets created. So you just have to be aware of that, Aaron. Maybe there's some dogma. Thank you, Kevin, for that reading. One thing I love about this practice is that when you think you kind of got a handle on an understanding, and then you hear something and you're like, oh, that's so awesome. Like it just reinvigorated my practice. The have you ever seen still flowing water? And I come from a Zen background, so it's almost like a new koan that I can kind of work with. Because it's like, but yeah, that whole explanation just it was like a light bulb. It's like, ah, there, yes. So now I can't wait to. I'll probably sit again after this meeting just because, like, yeah, I want to think about that some more or not think about it. I don't know. If you don't mind, what was the name of the book again? Because
It's Small Boat, Great Mountain.
small book right now.
And
Thank
I
you.
believe that Monica put a link
Oh, did
in
she? Okay.
to, let's see, I'm scrolling up.
Oh,
Scrolling up.
she did. Oh, it's on. I'll add it to my order with Abhaya Giri. I love their program of, me being on a budget, being able to get material with.
I mean, there's a PDF of it, so
Oh, or even better. Oh,
you
there.
can
Okay, I see your link. Yeah.
just
Okay.
download it.
Okay. Well, yeah, thank you for that. Loved it.
Yeah, thank you. It is a koan. That's exactly what it is. When I think the same thing when I read it. It's ex he's trying to accomplish the same thing that a Zen master is trying to accomplish by saying, "What's the sound of one hand clapping?" and et cetera. Which is again very interesting that there are these parallels and connections between the traditions that we ordinarily sort of divide them up. But I do also, like you, love how Ajahnamurobodhisattva explains it in a very simple way, saying the mind itself is still, and then there are these objects that go through the mind. It's like, oh, so that's what's happening. Okay, that's pretty simple. That's the stillness and the flowing. Amuro is something of a master. He is a master. Cheryl, hi.
Thank you so much. This was a great teaching for me today because you addressed some things I think that are challenging as I try to hone in on I don't want to say hone in on my meditation practice and the whole concept of these things that pass through that flow through us are actually aligning with their nature. Which was just a lovely concept for me. And it gave new meaning to me, from a kid on up. I remember the saying, go with the flow. Well, this is now my new meaning of going with the flow and not resisting it because that's where the suffering comes from the grasping of it, having a certain expectation. This was brilliant. I want to tell you, this has really been a game changer for me. And then when you brought up, relating this to recovery, go with the flow. And then I thought, easy does it. I mean, this is really what it's all about. And I'm not, I hated slogans. I'm going to tell you that straight up. But it's like it screamed at me, go with the flow, easy does it. Ah, it was like a revelation. Now, we've all heard this before. I've certainly heard it before, like, yeah. It's like today it's become profound. And thank you, Kevin.
That's so interesting, isn't it? I mean, just the phrase that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear It's when our mind is ready, the teachings become clear, you know, not to make poetry here, but bad poetry. But these simple ideas, you know, spiritual ideas are simple. Spiritual experiences are profound. And when our mind is blocked, we can hear all the spiritual ideas in the world, and they don't mean anything to us. Mm-hmm. When our mind is open, a simple idea gets dropped in there, and boom, you know. I mean, we see it in the suttas, where people repeatedly become enlightened when the Buddha says, everything is impermanent. And people are like, bam, you know, and we're all sitting here going, well, yeah, that's true. That's, yeah, I get that. But I'm not enlightened. I don't know. And it's because of the ripening of the mind. And our meditation is meant to ripen our mind to hear the truth, to resonate with the simple, you know, wisdom. And
I love what Jamie offered. I was very touched by Aaron's share as well.
Yeah.
Hang in there, girlie. You on the right path. And, you know, I thought about this because I feel like we are in the midst of some unusual times. I'll just say it that way.
Well put.
It's unusual times. And I feel like nature offers us so much, you know, because there are many diverse aspects of nature. So I really try to allow that to help me be accepting and understanding of differences. And somehow, it's with all the differences in nature and the diversity, it's very much unified. There's a unity, there's a oneness, a connectedness. So I really am desperately holding on to that, and I find it very comforting.
Yeah.
And I will say thank you for the time. I appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks, Cheryl. Well, that's a nice way to wrap up. I think I could blather on, but I think it'd be better to leave us on a nice note like that, the connectedness, the nature of nature. And so, we'll be back. I continue, you know, we'll continue to do this on Tuesdays. This Friday is my Spirit Rock class, for those who are interested in seeing me again this week. And if you don't know, the time has changed to 6 p.m. Pacific. So particularly if you're on the East Coast or further east, you know, if you're in Scandinavia, for instance, well, it'll still be like 3 o'clock in the morning, sorry. Just to remember, because it used to be at 7:15, so we're earlier, and we're just going for 90 minutes, so 6 until 7:30 this Friday night. And if you just go to the Spirit Rock website, you go through their calendar, and you'll find the link. So very nice to see everyone, and I'm grateful, really, you don't know, for you showing up and giving me purpose for my Tuesday mornings definitely helps. So I hope it helps you. So we're helping each other. So yeah. Blessings.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Kevin.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. All right.
Have a beautiful day.
Thank you, everybody. Take care, and see you all soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Monica.